welcome back to the Aerospace Executive Podcast. I'm really happy today to have my old friend Troy Wilson with me. Troy is not an aerospace guy. He is actually a news guy and now an author. He just wrote a new novel called Fake News, which is a fantastic political thriller. But the one thing Troy has got in his background in 30 years of journalism is he has been a known turnaround guy for local TV stations. And loving to hear what his recipe is for turnarounds and culture change and driving culture change and everything of the sort. So hey, Troy, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Craig. It's great to talk to you again. I know you're doing well.
We're having a good time. Happy New Year.
New Year to you too.
So let's talk about, 30 years, you led TV stations.
Yes.
And you were the guy who they always called in, basically, we've got a mess to fix. And
right.
You became the fix-it guy. What drove that reputation? What got you to to become the fix-it guy?
Before I go there, I do want to thank you for reading the book. Your words were very inspiring to me. You're a little insecure when you write your first novel, and I really appreciate what you said. And if anyone like Craig thinks our news media is not serving us today, Fake News, a novel on Amazon. Answer your question.
It was a great. It's a great book. I read it twice, so I loved it. So we'll talk about that a little bit at the end. But
I wrote it 100 times, but I hear you. Yeah. So to answer your question, basically, how I got that reputation was by default. I never walked into a newsroom, and I ran six of them over the years. That was not in dead last place, and because I had success with them. People saw that and said, oh, well, here's what he's good at. But he's not the kind of person we'd ever put in a first place newsroom because the cultures are entirely different. In a first place newsroom, you typically have an entrenched culture, one that needs to be pushed, but not necessarily too hard. You have people in there who are trusted by viewers, who know the market, who are in a good place. A last place TV station, there are usually many good reasons for that. And what you have to do as a turnaround artist is have the courage to go in and, as the book Good the Great would tell you, confront the brutal facts and develop a strategy to put that television station on the map. It's not cookie cutter. You would be in television news, I think as in many industries, you would be foolish to confuse Boise with Boston. They are two completely different cultures. People think differently there. I remember a news director one time telling me in Minneapolis they don't like using breaking news graphics too much because viewers hate them. Whereas in other markets, they work like a charm. So, I think with any industry that you work with, including yours, Craig, the first rule is learn everything you can about your audience. Understand you can't have 100% of them. Put a target on the people's backs who you want and go after them with complete focus.
The one thing I find, it's interesting you say that, the cultures amongst companies are different. People who grew up or, spend 20, 30 years in big companies often struggle in small companies. They don't know how to deal with the ambiguity. They struggle with the ambiguity. They struggle with usually a lack of resources. And they struggle with a hierarchy that is usually non-existent. And on the flip side, people from small companies have a hard time going to big companies because there's too much structure and bureaucracy.
Right.
And ultimately you're right. What works in one area will absolutely not work in another. So.
Here's the point though, Craig. Part of the key in that whole environment is you yourself. Okay. What's your happy place? All right. It can't just be money. It can't just be compensation. All right. Unless you're a salesperson who literally eats what they kill, compensation is rarely a major motivator for most people. They want to be treated fairly, compensation, and they want to make good money. But that's not what's going to move them. What's going to move them is how they feel in the environment that they're walking into? What's their confidence level? What's their expertise level? Do they think that they're in a good position to bring change? Okay. And for me, that was in the medium to small market landscape. I never wanted to work in Chicago. I never wanted to work in New York. And I had a job offer in LA once. I turned it down flat. There's no way I'm working in LA. It's a big market culture. It's a different culture. I wanted to work in the smaller markets where, first of all, I liked living. But second of all, I could be a bigger fish in a smaller pond. I could make change more easily. I was bringing in younger, newer journalists who are easier to train. That was my happy spot. So I think the first question you have to ask about that in terms of, you know, where you are and where you want to be is, you know, where are you going to work best? What's going to work best for you, not just on a professional level, but also on a personal level? Where is it that you want to be? And if you find the sweet spot, you're going to be a much, much happier and productive person than if you put yourself basically, you know, in square peg round hole.
Yeah, I got no doubt. I mean, you're right. You know, people who are eat what you kill, you know, commission only salespeople, they are, you know, it's not about the money. It's about the hunt and it's about the victory. Absolutely. And that's something that companies, you know, I was just talking to a person yesterday. He's like, you know, it's a commission sales job and the base is this and the total comp is that. And he's freaking out. He's like, yeah, the base is low. And I'm like, look, if you're working for your base, you're probably not that much of a salesperson. You know, think right. about it differently. True. Think about the where you can go with this. My guess is if you're not making, you know, 250 in that commission only sales role or that, you know, base plus commission sales role, you're probably not even, you know, it's going to be a very short, you know, it's going to be a very short conversation with your boss anyway. So you got to think about, you know, the goal, not the, you know, not the starting place, but the end place.
Right. And also the opportunity, the opportunity. So let me tell you a quick story. I was working in a Midwestern market the station was in bad, bad shape. It'd never been out of last place ever. Okay. And, I had to, you know, I came in, was hired by a friend of mine, turn it around. And my first determination was we need a male anchor. They didn't have any male anchors. And I get why. Male anchors are hard to find these days. There aren't a ton of good ones out there. So what lands on my desk out of the blue is a resume from a morning news anchor in Sacramento, California, probably making twice what I can afford to pay him. Okay. And I'm like going, what is this thing? All right. Why is this on my desk? Right. And so, but I called him and I talked it out with him. And it turned out that he needed to make a change. His contract was up. They were not going to renew, probably to save some money. He needed to find something else. He wanted to become an evening anchor. But everywhere he went, they would only offer him morning anchor positions. But he felt if he could be an evening anchor in my small little piddly Midwestern market for 3 or 4 years, then he could find a bigger market main anchor job that would pay him good money. And guess what? That's exactly what happened. And in the meantime, my 5 o'clock news went from an 8 share to a 24 share in the span of 3 years, in part because of him. He wasn't the only reason. He was a piece of the puzzle, but because he was willing to take less compensation to gain a skill and to be visibly seen as an evening anchor, and because I was willing to take the risk on him, we both ended up with a win-win.
Yeah, and that's all about having the conversation. Yeah,
absolutely.
You looked at the resume and you're like, no way I can afford this guy, but I'm going to call him anyway.
Right.
You have the conversation. And ultimately, you know, if you know, it's a give and a take. It may cost you 10 grand more than you want to pay,
yeah,
but you're looking at the benefits. You're looking at the benefits. I have these conversations. I'm like, look, it's 10 grand more than you want to pay. You know, it's not going to make a difference in your life, Mr. Billion Dollar Company. Right. You know, get out of your HR head. But you know, that's
mind you, then Craig, I was working for a third place station then. They didn't have resources. What I ended up doing was combining two jobs together to be able to afford him. But it was worth every penny. I was one man down and that wasn't great, but he was worth every penny. And I've done that in the past with other people who I felt had the ability to take my newsroom to a new level of rating success. I can name many names of people who really, really helped me because I was willing to take a risk on them, a chance on them, and do something that was a bit unorthodox. But you know, here's the deal, and true across every industry, you will always do better if you can hire better people. It's not always about having more people. Sometimes it's about just focusing on having better people, because they are the difference makers. You and your business, you bring difference makers to companies, and I know they respond accordingly about how much they appreciate your assistance in doing so.
There's nothing more, you know, nothing better to my, more music to my ears than, you know, a CEO called me in November and said, the two people you put in my company have totally changed the dynamic.
But guess
that
what?
Makes you feel good.
You didn't put him in your company though. He did. And how he did was he used the initiative to realize that he could not do it himself and he needed help. And so he called you.
Absolutely.
Right? And so that's, you know, that's how you use a tool. And that's how human dynamics work. You've got to be willing to at least explore, you know, doing something different if you're not having success at something. And that's where initiative comes in. I always said that whenever I hired anybody, number one thing, do they have initiative? If they have initiative, everything else can be worked out, right? But initiative is one of those key ingredients that you're usually not going to be successful if you don't have it.
Every TV station you went to was usually dead last in its market.
They were all dead last.
Why were they all dead last? What was the dynamic that was going on? Were they just all happy? And were they all just happy being mediocre? Or were they, were they all beat up? Were they happy being mediocre? Did they just not care? Was the money okay? Was it like the old local and A's where we can be in last place and be fine financially? And what was the catalyst to make that person who hired you say, hey, I'm tired of being last. I want to be better.
Okay. So typically last place stations have different reasons for being last. Sometimes it was a culture. Sometimes it was just a culture of defeatism. Oh, we'll never beat the other guys. We'll never be any better. They've got so much more than we have and what have you. I remember very distinctly walking into a TV station and there was a dominant number one. They've been dominant number one forever since the 1950s. No one had really ever come close to touching them. And so the attitude in the newsroom was, well, we'll never beat them. And I'm like, but we can try. We can make the attempt. We can be better. And, you know, I spent 5 years in that news department. At the end of the fifth year, we'd had 4 Emmys. We were dominating the awards. We were within 5 share points in 2 newscasts of the dominant number one. Now, were we going to catch them? Probably not. I mean, they spent 3 times what I spent on news. They had a very loyal audience. I could pick off some stuff, but I wasn't going to be able to really unseat them. But we got closer than anyone ever imagined. They actually built a display case in the lobby, a giant one, for all the awards we were taking in. And it was because we were doing award-winning work, and in TV news, award-winning work can sell. Now, we did some other things as well. We had a far better weather product than they had, or we developed one, and that went a long way. We had the only meteorologist in the market at the time. I mean, everyone's got them now, but back then, that was a bit more unusual. It was not a good weather market. It was, you know, it was dry a lot, but dry and sunny. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, so there's a lot of strategies involved there. But the thing about it is that the first thing you've got to do is you've got to have that can-do spirit. You cannot fall victim to defeatism. You've got to believe in your heart of hearts that you can come up with ways to grow the product and close the gap. And, you know, and of course, me just being the only thing I do, you know, I had some standard tricks up my sleeve. The number one thing was find the vulnerability. I always tell people that, you know, if you want to be number one, the first thing you've got to be is the first alternative. All right. You've got to position yourself. So if someone gets mad at number one, you're the first guy they're going to go to. And if you can position yourself there, then number one is achievable.
That's an interesting point. I never thought about it that way. Be the first alternative. You know,
yeah.
Because ultimately,
well, Craig, I think you're the first alternative. You know, I think if somebody, you know, in your business line, this is how I see it. You correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, you've got the big giants out there. You've got Korn, Ferry, right? And all those guys. And they've tried to hire you because they understand you're a threat. You're the first alternative. They're going to lose out on some big deals because you're there. And so the way to eliminate you is to eat you. And because you've positioned yourself as a true threat to them. Now, you're not going to take all their business. You're small. You're petite. That's fine. It works for you. That's your happy place. But nonetheless, that's what you've done.
Well, it's the difference between Walmart and, you know, the little corner boutique, right? Walmart doesn't really care about the little corner boutique, but you know, the boutique, you find your audience and you find your customer, and then you deliver that customer outstanding customer service at a reasonable price. And you'll be, and you'll forever live. And that's just kind of, look, I can't go beat the, you know, there's some stuff out there I'm never going to be able to touch.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't bother me. I mean, I don't care. Right. You know, it's like, hey, look, I don't really care. They can have it. It's not my bailiwick, and you know, that's fine. I've found my lane. You find your lane and you stick in it, and you become really good at what you know, and the world becomes your oyster.
Well, I think that what you've done well, from what I know of you, is that, you know, you've taken an area of expertise and you've shown integrity and you've built trust. And in my mind, you know, trust is a big thing in news, and I think we're lacking a lot of it now. And they've thrown it away, and it's sad. But trust is also a big thing in business because it's a force multiplier. If people trust you, they're not only going to, you know, try to do business with you, they're going to tell others about the experience of doing business with you. And all of a sudden you're gonna be a speaker at conferences, and you know, people would be calling you out of the blue instead of you cold calling them, and things along those lines. You've built that. Congratulations. I've seen the success you've had, and I cannot be more impressed. But I know, I've seen how you do it. And part of that is the trust you've built with the customer base. And because they trust you to have, you know, to do what's best for them, even in the short term, if it's not best for you. They trust you to be a truth teller. You know, they know that, you know, you've got a low BS meter, and that if they need to hear something, you're going to tell it to them. I think those are remarkable characteristics for any business person. And in my opinion, you've mastered them.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Thank you. Gitman, I feel good now. Thank you for noticing.
You should. Yeah. I mean, I know before you set this up, you're telling me you have been having a record sales year, correct?
Yeah, that's good. It was a good year.
Yeah.
2023 will be
good. Well, congratulations. You've earned every little bit of it. And Craig, and again, going back to our analogy here, you know, you made a decision early on with this whole thing. I remember when you first did this, like, oh God, 15 years ago? Now,
yeah.
A long time ago. And your happy place was, if I can just make $150,000 a year, yeah, that'd be enough. I could live off of that. I can make that work. That's all I need. Okay. But instead of, again, focusing on the compensation, you focus on the construction. Okay. How do I build this so that I can get beyond that? And in doing so, I mean, you've far exceeded any early expectations you've had, because you focused on it and doing it well. And part of you is, look, I'm a company. It's me. All right. I give personalized individualized service. I don't have any employees. All right. I don't want any employees. I don't want to manage employees. I do it better on my own. Now, in my case, I don't have that option. I have to have employees. So I have to be a manager. But I've been a manager all my life. Yep. You know, you want to try managing something difficult? Try managing something, a room full of people where they're on TV all the time.
Oh my gosh. You know, it's the egos, you know, it's great. It's like engineers. I mean, it's toughest people in the world.
Oh yeah.
Salespeople, absolutely. Engineers. And I got to think TV people who are all,
huge outside egos, way bigger than their
one up, who are all one up in each other. But how did you how did you change cultures though? I mean, you talk about, hey, look, you come in and you got cultures that are, the defeatism. Did you change people out? Did you, obviously you're going to bring new people in, which means some old people got to go.
Yeah, that did happen. That did happen. You know, I had to fire people. I mean, that did happen. There were nabobs of negativism, what Spear Agnew used to say, that just had to go. They were just not going to work. But, you know, the first thing I did was that I did not ask. I demanded accountability. Okay. If somebody screwed up on air or what have you, or was not performing up to the level, they knew it, and they knew it fast. Mm-hmm. Because I would tell them, look, you did not do your best work today. That is unacceptable. Okay. Come in tomorrow and do your best work. And, you know, and I also put in a team friend. They didn't just let themselves down or me down. They let the whole newsroom down because, you know, it's the entire product. And sometimes, there were obstacles that were very, very difficult to overcome, but, you know, what you do is you just never stop trying, and you never stop trying to convince the people who are part of you that you can show them a better way. using your experience, using your know-how, using your knowledge, using your ability to manage them, using your ability to teach them. One of the things I was very proud of in virtually every newsroom I did, with one exception because it didn't work, was long form. You don't see long form on TV anymore. It's weird. It's gone away. But I actually won a Polk Award for investigative journalism. I didn't win it. I'm sorry. My newsroom won it under my leadership for a series of stories that put a mayor in jail. And you know, the thing about that was interesting was that just the whole process of teaching them how to do it as we were going along, was the growth I saw in individuals as I mentored them and worked with them one-on-one and things like that was just remarkable to me. I mean, if you just put in the effort to show people the way and show them a better way, you have to know it yourself, okay? But if you just put in the effort, it's hard work, but you'll be amazed how they will respond, most of them, especially if they have the qualities like initiative and what have you.
What were the people that were working for you looking for the most? Mentorship, guidance,
All different. This is the one thing about having employees or running a 50-person newsroom, right? Is that you've got to know what's the win-win for each of them. And you can't treat them all the same. You want to so badly, but you can't. And you have to have a management structure in place, assistant news director, executive producer, whatever the case may be, who is on the same page with you and is working directly with them as well. And you kind of compartmentalize it off. But for example, the anchor I told you about, who just wanted to learn how to be an evening anchor, his one thing was, in order to be successful, he knew he had to be a part of a team that could put on a quality newscast, or else he wasn't going to look good. Mm-hmm. And so, I knew that about him. I knew that if I could give him that day after day, he would feel like he was being fulfilled and doing good work and what have you. He wasn't a great reporter or storyteller, but I did experiment with that a little bit just to show him that side of it. He's been a morning anchor all his life, and they don't really do a whole lot of that. Okay. I can think of other people who, one who is now a national network anchor. I gave him his first job, and he was just all about just wanting to get out there and do stuff. He was a real go-getter. So I let him. And, we had a philosophy of doing just everything with live shots, even though we didn't have a whole lot of equipment to do it. We faked it a little bit, but he loved doing live shots. He just wanted to be out there live, giving the story, breaking news, whatever the case may be. And as long as I could keep feeding that beast, he was going to grow and grow and grow and grow. And, he only lasted a year and a half before he got a job promotion to a major market and then went to a major network. But nonetheless, it was just that ability to see what he really wanted and just to be able to keep feeding it to him day after day after day. Interestingly enough, back in those days, he had no interest in being an anchor. And now he is. So you can see how that changes over time as we get older and what have you. And that's why you have to, treat individuals and motivate them where they are at that time, because it will evolve and change.
So here's a big struggle that you always had. You were hiring people knowing that they were only going to stick around for a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years. Mm-hmm. If they were really, really good, you knew their tenure with you was short. Mm-hmm. How did you manage to, and you were okay with that because ultimately, mm-hmm. You knew there was a better, you knew they were going to grow. How'd you manage the turnover?
Okay, well, in every market I worked in, there were stalwarts. There were people who weren't going to go anywhere. They were attached to the market in some way. And so them I didn't worry about so much, okay, as far as them turning over or leaving. What I needed to feed them was fulfillment in their work. But as far as the turnaround is concerned, there's kind of a flip side to that. And that's if you become known as a station in a market that's graduating people to top 30, 20, 10 markets, even the network, you're going to get a much better applicant pool. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that you're trying to develop that reputation so that the top talent that's out there is willing to come to work for you, even if the wages aren't what they want or as competitive as they like. And so that's what that gains for you. Now, admittedly, at the second job or entry level, there's always a bit of a gamble there. But if you see somebody who has got the potential and you're offering them a job, and somebody in a market 30 markets larger is offering them a job, but your newsroom is seen as more dynamic, you're going to land that candidate because they can see the future through you.
Mm-hmm. It's the opportunity they're looking for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the opportunity is what we should all be looking for. opportunities are what lead to success, not necessarily jobs.
Yep, I got you. So let's shift gears a little bit. You just wrote a novel, political thriller. Mm-hmm.
First one.
It's really good.
Thank you.
It's called Fake News.
Thank you. Now I'm in my happy place. Thank you, Donald Trump, for the title, right?
So let's talk about that a little bit. You talked about trust, and you talked about what's the catalyst behind the book?
You know, for one thing, I know this sounds kind of strange, but you know, people ask you what your hobby is. My hobby is writing. I still love to write. I'm not in the newsroom anymore, obviously. I'm retired, but I still like to write, and I still like to tell stories and what have you. And so, the catalyst for this was, honestly, you know, when I got into journalism in the 1980s, that's how old I am. I loved the business. It was absolutely a fascinating place to be. It had integrity. It had trust. I mean, think about this. 50 years ago, the most trusted man in America was a journalist named Walter Cronkite. Imagine that today. Oh, my goodness. I believed in it. I believed it was important. I believed I was doing something important. And when I left TV News, I didn't feel that way anymore. I just felt as if the whole thing had been kind of, you know, that we'd thrown all that trust we'd earned away, that the business had been hollowed out, that it had become more about telling you what to think than giving you information to make you think. Mm-hmm. And that my style of journalism was on the way out. You know, I was still trying to do the important work. I was still trying to do long form investigations. I was still, you know, even people were saying, you don't do that anymore. And so the book for me was kind of a shot back at, and it's not preachy at all. I think you would agree with that. It draws you to a place. It's a shot back at, my feeling that, you know, if we want to rebuild trust in journalism today, we've got to start looking at the old standards that built that trust, that made Walter Cronkite beloved, that made them make a movie starring Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman out of a couple of reporters for the Washington Post in the 1970s. That would never happen today because people don't trust. I mean, you know, the Pew Research puts out a trust poll every year. It's the lowest it's ever been. I think it's like 7% have a high percentage of trust in the news. It's like, who are these people? I don't know what they're watching. This is what this kind of book leads to, but it's not preachy at all. It's just meant to draw you to a conclusion. You may agree with the conclusion. You may disagree with the conclusion, but the idea behind it is basically to take you to a place to help you understand, you know, where news is, and what that means for frankly, I believe our democracy. So that was the motivation kind of behind it. You know?
I think the industry has become, you know, it's become entertainment. I mean, it's, you know, Fox versus MSNBC versus CNN and a lot of opinion and a lot of motivation to create a reaction versus a thought process. And I think, I think that's a big struggle with people today is that they have, you know, very short attention spans. They want it all in 20 seconds. They don't really want to think about it. And they're going to get down the path that, you know, they're emotionally attached to no matter what. Something that's got to change a little bit.
No, you can blame the victim here. I'm going to blame the criminal. And what I mean by that is basically this, viewers didn't abandon good storytelling. Good storytelling abandoned them. Okay. And to give you an example, my book, okay. My book is very much written as a newscast. Okay. It doesn't seem that way. You're reading it, but in my thought process, that's how I was doing it. And I had a friend of mine who said, I couldn't put it down. 5 hours later, I'm done with it. It's just like, I just couldn't stop reading it. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, well, that's because, no hubris here, but it uses storytelling techniques. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tried and true ones that I learned over the years that no one is using now. And I can't find them anywhere. I mean, I watch the news each night. I'm a news junkie still. I read, I watch TV, I do all that. But, you know, all I do is self-critique it. It's just like, it's sad. And it's just, unfortunately, we've lost that in TV news. Can we regain it? I don't know. I mean, but I felt at least I wanted to make an attempt to expose it a little bit.
But it's funny you say that, because like I mentor a lot of college kids, as you know, and mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of young executives. I'm like, you know, hey, look, you know, they talk about, what do I do when I go into an interview? Or how do I make a really good customer presentation? Or even when I go speak at conferences, right. Nobody wants to hear a lecture and nobody wants to hear canned answers. What they want to hear, the most powerful way to get your message across in business is to tell a good story, is to tell a story. A truthful story where, you know, as I tell people, look, if you got a challenging situation, you find a fear felt found story, you know, a feel felt, yep. you know, I've been in your position. I know how you feel. I felt the same way when I was in that position. And here's how I found out the best path out of mm-hmm. it was you tell a story.
Right.
It's a great communication. It's the best way to do business.
Right. And you know, I will add to that is the fact that, you know, when I worked in many of my markets, we would do long form stories. Some of them, most of them features, some of them investigations and hard news. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, they would capture, they were put in a way so that they would capture your attention throughout. Because, you know, we have the technology then where we could monitor viewership second by second almost. And you know, I knew when they were tuning out. And I knew when they never tuned out during a good, well-promoted, long-form story. They stuck with it because it captured their attention. What's happening now today is that it's an art that is either people don't believe in anymore, or they don't know how to teach it, or they don't know how to learn it. It does take time. It does take effort. Yeah. And it's not the only thing you should be doing. I wouldn't argue that for a moment. But, you know, unfortunately, what's happened is that I think that, you know, you're right. There's been a turn here. And really, most of it all started with the death of newspapers. But, you know, but there's been a turn here where I think egos have taken over a little bit. Self-importance has taken over a little bit. And because of that, it's now you're watching me because you want to know what I think, not you want to know what to think. Right. You want information from me that makes you think. And the latter is where you build trust, because that means you trust the viewer to make a good decision. You trust the viewer to use good information and what have you. And I don't think most broadcasters, they trust their viewers. I think it's more like, you know, if you're on Fox, I know you're conservative. I know you lean to the right, so you're going to want to hear what I say. If you're on MSNBC, it's the left and what have you. But you know, if you want to name a news organization out there, I know that you, for example, like the Wall Street Journal. It's a good paper, Murdoch paper, but a good paper. You know, and things like that, and you find some good information in there. But you know, by and large, for the most part, you know, most of it is simply just opinion masking as reporting, and that's why trust is so low. That's why trust is so low. And trust is, you know, in any business, but especially in news, you know, trust is a special sauce. If you can build that, you know, as networks did in the 70s and 80s. You know, then you've got a powerful, powerful product. If you lose it, people are just going to blow you off.
Look, I've seen, it's not just news, but I've seen lack of trust blow up more careers.
Sure.
You know, credibility, you know, it's like, you know, the mm-hmm. salesperson whose numbers never, you know, they always say they got so many deals working and then they show up, you know, 50% short. There's no credibility in their, you know, no credibility in the prediction. Finance people, you know, who are, you know, FP&A, you know, financial planning analysis. They're out there planning and analyzing, and their predictions always come up short. CEOs who, you know, there's no trust from the shareholders or the board of directors. It blows up. Mm-hmm. You know, they, you know, you.
FTX.
You know,
bad stories about Alameda, and all of a sudden the trust is gone. Right.
Not just in Alameda, really, but the trust in crypto. Yeah. Everybody, you know, the great story about crypto, it's an inflation hedge. It's going to be the new way to do it. Yeah. It's going to be a new way of doing business. Yeah. It's going to be, now everybody's going, well, wait a minute, is this thing a scam? And, you know, I've got my opinion on crypto. Yes, it's a scam. But you know, everybody who is a true believer in there now is doubting, you know, the value of crypto because of
I mean, Larry David made that funny commercial about and you know, it turned out, you know, in an ironic sort of way, I think a lot of people think his reservations are right. You know, this is not a safe place for my money.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. I think the thing to take away from your book, from this podcast, from the message is, hey, look, you know, tell a story, have integrity, you know, actions build, trust building actions build trust, which take businesses forward.
If you walk into an organization and you need to turn it around, make your life a story. Okay. Tell the story that you want to see happen, that you know can happen, that you know can help, you can help facilitate action, and that your people can make happen. Okay. And if you can be convincing, you'll give them hope and they'll give you a shot. And that's all you can really ask for. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But if you can give that narrative, if you can create that story in their heads that yes, things can be a lot better, follow me. Many times they will.
There you go. So Troy, where do people find your book?
Amazon, Troy.
Amazon.
A novel. $9.99, I believe, for the Kindle or the digital version. They have a digital Kindle thing. Paperback, I think, is $19, and I've got a few paperbacks. Really cool. But yeah, I mean, give it a shot. I mean, if you think the news media is not serving the American people, it's not serving you. Read it. It's a fictional book. It's a story. Everyone who's read it full through it says very entertaining, including Craig here. Thank you for that, sir. But you'll learn something. And as a matter of fact, it's funny. I had a consultant friend, text me the other day, actually. He said basically outright, it got me thinking about what I'm doing, consulting these TV stations. It was a real eye opener for me. And it's an eye opener for him. There are many layers to it. You may not, if you work in TV news, you may not get even through all of them. But if it's an eye opener for him, I think it'd be an eye opening experience for a lot of people. And that's why I wrote it. I just wanted to send a message.
No, I love it. And author Troy Wilson at gmail.com is how people get a hold of you.
Yes. Author Troy Wilson at Gmail is my email address. Yeah, absolutely. I would love to hear your thoughts. If you buy it and read it and love it, I'd love a review. I've got 4 good ones right now. It's only been out for a few weeks, so I'm working on that.
You got 20 stars. You got 20 stars out there right now.
Yes, I do. You're one of them. I appreciate, like I said, I appreciate the review, Craig. You're a great friend. And like I said, you were a great encouragement to me. So thank you. And thank you for having me on your podcast. I really appreciate it.
We'll talk again soon. Thanks for coming on. I hope you enjoyed the latest edition of the Aerospace Executive Podcast. You can reach out to me directly, Craig at NorthStarESG.com, or check us out at www.NorthStarESG.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or on YouTube. Just do a search for Aerospace Executive Podcast. Thanks again. I'm Craig Pittman.